Hard Glass.
And you're listening to It's All About Food. Of course you are. That's why you're tuning in, because you want to hear, about food, right? Well, before we get started, well, actually, we have gotten started, haven't we? But before I bring on my guests, I want a little pity party here. You may remember last week I was broadcasting from my bed with a fever, and that fever lasted an entire week. I cannot believe it, but I had the worst flu probably that I can ever remember. And fortunately, the fever broke on Sunday, and I am on the mend. But that doesn't mean it's easy. And I hope I'm not going to do any of the hacking that I've been doing most today. So I've got a lovely pot of green tea right by my side. Keep me hydrated, lubricated. And maybe a little while later, I'll moan and groan a little bit more about my pathetic state. Vegans aren't supposed to get sick, right? Wrong, whoever said that. I would like to figure out how this flu came to me, and I know that it's something that I will never know. Now on to happier things, because I am so excited about bringing on my guests, Jeff and Joan Stanford from the Stanford Inn by the sea in Mendocino, California. Are you with me?
Yes, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you, Joan. And is Jeff there too?
Yes.
Oh, great. You guys are adorable. Now,
I don't know it.
I have to tell you, you know, I don't know you. I wish I did. I love your story. I've known about your place for a very long time. These are all my own little, I'm sorry, mea culpas, whatever. I don't know why we've never made it to your inn. I lived in the Bay Area for about 9 years until the early 90s, and then I commuted there for the longest time. My partner's from San Jose. We visit all the time. I've said almost every trip for like the last 15 years, we have to get to Mendocino, and it just hasn't happened. It will happen.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at your stunning cookbook, Dining at the Ravens, and I really didn't know how the story began. And I hope you can just share a little bit about that before we dig into the deliciousness of it all, because it's something I think a lot of people fantasize about, and few people really make it happen and get their hands dirty or invest the 35 years to make it happen.
It's true, and I think a lot of people, when you say they fantasize about it, they really it's a fantasy world. It's very different to run a business and to have to make tough choices. And we always tried to make the ones that fit in with our values. And so it wasn't always the best business decision in terms of guests, because they weren't always happy when we switched the breakfast from vegetarian to vegan, for example. But, you know, we live here, and we have to have a place that represents us.
And our values.
And our values. And it's been a great life for us. So I encourage people, I don't mean to discourage people that have the fantasy, but it is a challenge. There's many challenges.
Yes.
Yeah.
The point is that we didn't go into this with this particular dream. We did not have a vision. But what we did was quite different than that. We let the vision come to us to manifest as we were doing it. And I understand that people have visions, you know, like that wonderful man, Trump, has a vision of becoming president, and, you know, everything, he can become president. We had nothing like that. What happened was, in the beginning, we had a really bad partnership that went really south. We were living in Carmel at the time, and Joan had fallen in love with this area, and we had no idea that we could even get in here. We were looking at more marginal areas where the prices would be less. We were all on borrowed money. Joan and I had $22,000, and that was it. And most of that wasn't even in real money. It was like wedding gifts that we never really turned in, you know, returned and stuff. We'd been married for just a short while, but well, 4 years. But but anyway, the point is that we have an openness to experience. One of the things is that we both understand is that we can be wrong. So we just plowed through, and when we were wrong, we corrected it. Like when I realized that I was having somebody kill animals and that I wouldn't do for myself, that was an unethical thing, so I quit eating meat. I learned about dairy 20 years later, and I quit eating that. Not that I ate very much of it anyway. Sorry, I have a leaf in my hair, apparently. I was out in the wilds taking a dog out. But in any case, the fact is that the vision basically manifested by listening to, just feeling what was going on this land. And there we have an advantage. We're on land. We're in a rural area. We can walk on grass. I look out on green, or if it's the off season, the summer, it's brown, but you lived out here. The point is, yeah. is that things changed, and by noticing them, it changed us. Like, Joan, tell your story about the trees.
Oh, is this in the book?
No.
It's not. Well, early on here, like when we first came in 80, I remember standing out on the deck and thinking, oh, this is just so beautiful. Wouldn't it be nice if we had a better ocean view or a ocean view? I don't think we had any
yes,
at that point.
It is in the book, but tell it.
It is in the book? Okay, good.
Yes.
Well, then, and so what happened was, I think it was that first winter, we had a lot of rain like we've had just this last few days, and this band of cypress on a lower road literally fell over, like their roots couldn't hold them anymore. It was almost like they sacrificed themselves for my wish. And I felt like the land was really welcoming us in that respect. I mean, you can get more esoteric about it, but I felt, and I said this recently to someone else, it felt like the land recognized that we were here and we were the right people to be here, that we had that custodial relationship rather than a strictly developmental and an abandoned mentality that some people that get into the business have, where they make it quickly and they're not really invested. I think they knew the land. I mean, my sense is that the land understood, or we understood something about the land. It was a co-creative thing right from the beginning. And I was pregnant at the time. I mean, I was, we were going to have a family here, which is why the original owners helped us get it and made terms that we could manage. They wanted somebody they wanted new people in the area that were going to be connected to the area. They saw this sort of trend of outside people coming in, and they didn't want that. They wanted Mendocino to have that same village feel that it had had in the past. And anyway, I'm off the track here, but anyway, that was the story Jeff wanted me to tell with the trees falling.
Feel free to interrupt anytime.
Yes, feel free.
Just like our children.
Your show.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great story. It's an important story. It's important to pay attention to your surroundings, and your surroundings pay attention to you. I could mention also in the book is you talked about the origin of the name of the restaurant, the Ravens.
Yeah, that's a great story. Do you want us to tell that one?
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
I loved
Jeff,
it.
You tell.
Okay.
It's a tough one to tell.
No, it's an easy one to tell because I don't even believe in death. So we don't have time for this, but that one. But in any case,
we have plenty of time, Jeff.
Maybe we
can talk about your belief system in a moment, but let's talk about the Ravens first.
No, I'm that's what we're going to talk about. So
in
1995, we were visiting my dad in Carmel, and the kids were out ahead of us. Well, actually, I was with them mostly, peddling these little Surreys that they have in New Monterey. And my stepmom and my dad and Joan and I were walking. I was kind of hanging out with my stepmother. Joan was talking to my dad, and my dad points to, and I was there, I saw this, but I didn't really hear all of it. He points to a black bird, which he thought was a crow, because we're from the Midwest, he didn't know the difference. And he points, he says, if anything happens to me, I'm coming back as one of these blackbirds was a crow. And so that was like April 4th. On May 18th, he died. On May 31st, the first two pair of ravens appeared here that have never been here before, not in the 15 years that we lived here, nor in the memory of any local had there been ravens here. There was a theory that I learned later that there had been ravens, but that people had killed them all. But there were none on the coast in any case for, I don't know, 50, 60 years, that maybe even more, because nobody knew about them. Anyway, they appeared. There are hundreds of them now. And so that's why we named the building where the ravens originally arrived, the Ravens. And they were on a tree above where that building is now. We're in that building today. Pardon me.
Okay. I love that.
And that's why we have the restaurant named the Ravens. And we look at ravens as I'm an anthropologist by original trade, and I look at ravens from the point of view of the indigenous peoples here that looked at them as creators. I don't have the European view as that they're just carrion birds and signify war.
They're
bookend. One
and they're also in a lot of systems of mythology. They're kind of a trickster character, and they come from, you know, they transgress from one world to the other in story, and they're very, very clever. They love mirrors. They love to play with things. They're very interesting, actually.
You know, they played on our equipment, which is right actually where the footprint of the Ravens restaurant is now. That's where our compost piles were. And we have a backhoe and dump truck to move that stuff around. And
Raven community was just waiting. And when you arrived, they knew it was safe to come back.
Yeah, they waited 15 years, though. Something had to happen that moved them here. Like they carried my dad's word with them.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Now, you've literally changed this place with your hands, digging in the dirt, creating gardens, planting gardens, landscaping, building, reconstructing, refurbishing, so much physical labor and love, and you've created a beautiful place. I've seen the pictures, and now we're going to focus on the food, because this show is all about food and delicious vegan plant-based food, the only food we should be eating on the planet, and why anyone would choose to eat anything else is way beyond me. But that's one of my mysteries.
Well, it's cultural. It's cultural, and it's part of their identity. I don't know how long you've been, you know, dealing with confrontations about it, but we have, although we were always a vegetarian, we served vegetarian breakfast from 1981 to the time we opened the dining room in 96. The people actually got mad because we put it in front of them that we were vegetarian. The restaurant was vegetarian. We didn't have breakfast meats. Their anger was significant. That was the first large loss of guests that we had. I mean, people would yell at me in the lobby, which was brand new. We'd opened it in 96, and about giving them a choice to eat other things. And it wasn't even half as bad when we went vegan and took away eggs. We'd already taken eggs and dairy out of everything that we served, that we made, that we prepared, like scones and all that. They'd been vegan for a long time. People didn't even know they were eating vegan hollandaise. But we didn't. But they basically, if you were local, you would have to pay $2 extra for eggs on something to make them aware. And then if they were guests, we would just do the eggs. But the cognitive dissonance that I experienced of not have been vegan for so long and still serving that stuff, I gave myself a Christmas present, and Joan and I gave ourselves a Christmas present. But that's the part that I run. And we made it vegan several years ago, and I feel a lot better. I think the energy around here feels a lot better, too.
And when did that happen? When did it go completely vegan?
Okay, all the cooking went completely vegan pretty much in 2007, I believe.
Okay.
And, you know, we eliminated eggs in, well, you don't use eggs in scone anyway, but we eliminated butter and went to Earth Balance in scones. We eliminated eggs in any baking that we were doing. We eliminated any dairy products at all in the process, in the process of making food, like dishes. We made our own cheese, or we tried some of the early forms of Daiya and soy cheeses and all that. We found it's better if we make our own. It actually melts pretty easily. We did all that then, and then in 2012 we turned it.
You're talking about the breakfast.
The breakfast.
Yeah, because the night was vegan.
Yeah, the night was vegan since 2007. So we had, it was just the breakfast that was a problem for us.
I see.
But okay. I've been vegan since 2004, so, you know, it was a lot of cognitive dissonance for me. I mean, it really was a problem because I understood the torture and the problems with the animals. And I know that there's health vegans and ethical vegans, and I didn't even know there was a dichotomy when I made these choices starting back in... back in 1985 is when I became vegan or vegetarian. But it was always a question of animals. It wasn't about me. And it was, why do I need to eat this? This is going to cause somebody else to suffer. It would be like, if you can only make this thing by some cook getting burnt, then don't eat this, whatever it is. It's the same thing with the animals. Don't eat it because they're going to suffer for it. And that's why I changed. And we really are low oil to no oil whole foods here. The recipes in this cookbook reflect a reduction in oil and all that, but they are restaurant recipes. But we've been working the last year to completely change all our recipes to using as little as that, being as almost as whole foods as possible. And many of them are in the cookbook, but we're continuing to develop more and new ones. And as a result, we are working on a whole variety of ethnic foods because, frankly, it's hard to take the Nouveau California, the French California combined kind of approach to cuisine and avoid fat, whether it's plant fat or animal fat.
Sure.
Doesn't really matter. It's very hard to avoid it because they combine we don't even try to copy that food anymore, but we did originally. We tried to get that essence of that very high-end Gary Dankel kind of restaurant, and I think we were very successful with it. We have a very high rating because of that. And since then, we've continued keeping the food at that level of quality, but with the focus on using whole foods, which means that we now dropped a bunch of things that uses sauces and the like, and actually they're not in this cookbook. We had an earlier cookbook. Those things were not put in this cookbook.
Hmm. Well, food is fascinating, and over the decades, things that we think were healthy, we discover maybe they're not so, and we move on to new schools of thought. I mean, I remember in the 80s when I was putting wheat germ on everything, thinking that was really good for me, and I would never use wheat germ today because it's not even a whole food. And
right.
I mean, there are just so many things that I remember thinking were good for me. Now, part of the value in any of that is if we really believe it, we get this placebo effect, and it may not have any detrimental effect on us because the placebo effect can take care of that, making us think it's really good for us and the body acts like it is. But meanwhile, in the world of vegan cuisine, there's been so much change. And you both have been so courageous, running a place like this, you are open only to criticism all the time, especially from Americans who want it their way and are never happy. Excuse me. And you have this thing to balance, which is people who are omnivores and then people who are vegan. And then there are many vegans that if you are not the most environmentally friendly and you haven't thought through every single ingredient and, you know, making it no oil and whole foods and palm oil free and every little thing. I mean, every food has a story. Every food has social issues, and, you know, we can't We can't do it all to please everyone.
Exactly. And it gets to be a bit of an obsession. I mean, you know, I think the advantage we have, as much as it's a challenge, is that we're exposing these people that might never go to a vegan restaurant. I mean, in their, you know, given the choice, they would go not to one. But because they're here and maybe they're tired checking in, they try it and they're so pleasantly surprised often. Or the last night of their stay, they just want to take it easy, pack and get ready to leave early. They'll try it the last night. And we've had people say, you know, we wish we'd eaten here first. This was one of the best places we had during our whole time here. So it's exposing it to more people, not just the hardliners or the ones that are, you know, like you're referring to, that are really conscious of every little thing. Because at a certain point, that actually I find a little disturbing. I recognize that we need information. And that it's to, you know, the end goal is to be the most nutritious and healthful food we can have. But at the same time, it can get a bit, I don't know, it's just me personally. It can get a little.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And when you're appealing to a wide range of clientele, especially people who don't know this food, it needs to be a little saltier. It needs to be a little richer. It just needs to be in order to, for them to feel that same level that they're used to with animal foods.
Mm-hmm.
But we're lucky. We're lucky. We had 60% of our guests come from the Bay Area. And that's a remarkably open group of people, particularly after the last 5-6 years. You've got the millennials are becoming our guests now, and they are much more aware than maybe people would give them credit. I don't know. I have no issues with this whole concept of millennial generation. They are they seem very wise. They're very active. They move around a lot. They appreciate a lot of what we're doing. The really difficult vegans that are around, and there are a few, they're a very small number. Many of them understand that a place like this is educational, and that's how we look at it. We're in the process of avoiding we already look for palm oil bases that's certified, that's not in forests that orangutans are in. You know, we're very careful about all of that, but somebody had to point that out to us that there was a problem. But we've actually been aware of that problem since this stuff got popular, so for many years now. And we've been trying to deal with it. And we're using coconut oil much more now and basically making our own butter to put in these things. But the fact is that we want to introduce as many people that will be making decisions for other people and also talking to other people that become leaders. We want to affect them. A lot of people are just followers, and they might be the ones that are arguing all the time. You know, they're following a good thing. They're vegan followers. But we need to get to leaders in California and schools and we get guests from all over Europe and Japan. We need to touch them so that we give them information and help in, you know, passing the word around. Like, I just finished an article on I didn't finish it. I wrote a long time ago, but I keep adding to it when I find another reason proving that we were always herbivores that could eat meat. So it's now 11 really good scientifically based reasons for the fact that we're herbivores. You can find most information on the net. They're not all the reasons are not necessarily always in the same article, but we assemble them and put them out there. People read that and they begin to understand what it is we're trying to do. We're trying to keep people healthy and do that by showing that a vegan diet can be joyful and fun, and when you leave the table you don't feel logy or anything like that. You've got energy.
What was that word you just used? You don't feel what?
Logy. It's a word meaning feeling heavy and down. Because
okay, logy. That's a good one.
We just have
a few minutes, and I want to jump into your cookbook a little bit, if we can.
Okay.
The first thing that popped out to me was the citrus polenta. We make a lot of polenta at home, and I've never made it with citrus, and obviously that's something I'm going to do very soon.
That's one of our most popular items.
Yeah, it's very popular. That was developed by Domenica Catelli when we first opened for breakfast in 1996. She was the person I worked with. She was the one that relieved me of cooking. I love Domenica. And then she's running a restaurant now in with her brother in Geyserville.
Mm. And
it's not vegan. It's not vegetarian either. But she was
okay.
Vegetarian.
Okay, boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Exactly.
You did.
That's a hard one for me. I never understand how you go the other direction, but anyway, people do.
It has to do with a cultural identity. She's Italian. I'm not making excuses. She's Italian. Her father was a cook. Her brother's a cook. And it's about money. You can make a living much more easy than what we do. So the rooms really allow us, the rooms that we rent here, allow us to do what we want to do with the restaurant. Guests can go wherever they want to eat. But this building is vegan. And the people that live here, we have interns living here, they have to be vegan. We don't allow any animal products brought onto these premises. In the rooms, people can do what they want to. They're renting a room. It's like renting an apartment. But here, this is a public space, and it's a vegan public space.
Exactly. Well, again, you have been extremely courageous, and I'm so glad that you're leading the way, showing the way, and hopefully other people that are learning through being at the Ravens or in other places will follow suit and not go in the other direction.
Yeah,
I hope not. Well, what happened was in the late 90s, we saw a huge burgeoning of vegetarians. There were a lot of vegetarians around. And there was a doctor that would come up, Elson, I can't think of his last name, but he'd come up from the Bay Area and work around, do seminars on vegetarian living, and actually at another place, a restaurant. And he quit. One time he came back and just was staying with us. He was not doing that work anymore, and he and I talked. They said, boy, there were a lot of vegetarians around. They all went away. And he said, yeah, they went to the Atkins diet. So they were health vegetarians. They went to health they were health vegetarians or weight vegetarians or whatever they were. And they didn't have that transpersonal, trans species look at it, which I think is a more of an ethical point of view, where you just don't do that kind of eating because it's so destructive and it's so cruel. It's hard because every now and then we run into a vegan, the guy comes and says, I'm just happened. I'm a vegan. Oh, but I eat fish. And I go, why?
Yes.
Fish are, first of all, if he thinks it's healthy, but fish carry a lot of toxic metals. It's the least healthy meat you can eat. And, and so that's not an ethical vegan. I think ethical, by approaching this ethically, you've got all your problems solved. You don't have to worry about your health anymore because it takes care of you, and that's what we try to do. Our newsletter that we give to our guests, every one of them, is really an argument for that. And we have good medicine, the PCRM thing in all our rooms.
Oh, sure.
So that people, that just making that one decision takes care of so many problems and gets rid of cognitive dissonance, that conflict within them that, actually impairs personal growth. I found that I made this. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the half hour. Wanted to say it's very obvious to me how you've been able to, for the last 35 years or so, build this beautiful place. You are fueled with quite a bit of passion for.
Yes.
The vegan movement. Excuse me, Joan?
I just said, come see us, Karen.
Oh, I definitely will. I can't stand talking about it anymore. I want to get there, and we'll do it as soon as we can. Look forward to meeting you.
Okay, and feel better. Thank you so much.
I actually don't know. Where are you?
I'm in New York.
Oh, okay.
We love New York. Love New York.
We go there a lot. We used to go there a lot. Our daughter was at NYU.
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful school. Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I just wanted to say this book, Dining at the Ravens, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea, beautiful recipes, a lot of comfort food looking dishes, delicious. So thank you for putting that together, and thanks for joining me. And it's all about food, Jeff and Joan Stanford of the Stanford Inn by the Sea.